Trump's going to have to change course, because the Chinese are not going to give one inch on this. They are furious, but they're not letting their emotions take over. We're just like, okay, we understand now what the United States is. We understand that we cannot trust them. So we will find alternatives, which is, again, one of the reasons they've been focused on BRICS, one of the reasons they're focused upon opening markets around the world.
Larry Johnson, good afternoon to you. How are you?
I am well. No complaints.
Glad to hear no complaints on my end either. So I was really, really interested in having you on. Just really specifically, let's start out with Iran. Please tell me what's going on or how you see things going on there right now. It looks like things have re-escalated significantly with the Trump administration. Is this Trump just trying to get leverage? Or is this something we should really be concerned about? It seems to be very neoconish, which has been.
Now, Trump is a hostage to the ardent Zionists. And to that end, he is willing to back, I think, Israel's demand that Iran get rid of Iran. Now, what's interesting is Trump has adjusted his stance. If you go back to his first term with the JCPOA, the agreement that was to control Iran's ability to develop a nuclear weapon, Trump walked away from that. And yet that agreement, even though it was limited for a 10-year period, imposed a number of restrictions on Iran. And Trump said, that's unacceptable. What was unacceptable about it? Well, it didn't address the missile technology of Iran, and it didn't impose a requirement to cut off support for Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis. So now Trump comes back into office and initially makes those the demands. But according to Witkoff, based upon the initial discussion, Iran's willing to cut back its enrichment rate. You know, right now it's hovering around 60% in one location. I understand you need 90% enriched uranium to get a nuclear yield. So what makes this fascinating is that back, you know, when this JCPOA was first negotiated, Iran did not have a close strategic, let's call it a military, economic, and political relationship with Russia or with China. They, you know, had cordial relations, but not nothing in depth. That's no longer the case. The first 2 weeks in March, Russia and China were conducting a joint military exercise with Iran. They followed that up in the next week. Their foreign ministers or diplomatic personnel were in Beijing. So the Chinese hosted the Russians and Iranians. Again, they were not just talking about future military exercises. They were talking about a coordinated strategy to deal with the United States, because the United States at that point was threatening to come after them. Then last week, like a week ago today, they met in Moscow with the Russians, Chinese and Iranians again. It was like a day later, you know, shortly later that week, that Steve Witkoff shows up. Now, we've been told that Witkoff is just talking about Ukraine, but I don't believe that for a second. I guarantee you that Putin discussed the relationship they have with Iran and how serious they would take any action by the United States to launch military attacks on Iran. And to that end, I'm sure Putin explained to Witkoff, lawyer to lawyer, about the strategic, the cooperative security agreement, the comprehensive cooperative security agreement that Russia and Iran signed on January 17th. And as part of explaining that, I pointed out to Witkoff that one of the sections and one of the articles included a specific commitment to work on nonproliferation between Iran and Russia. And I'm sure Putin explained to Witkoff that that means they do not have a nuke, and that our part of this relationship and in this agreement is that they will never have a nuke. So Witkoff goes from that meeting with Putin then to Oman, and he hears basically the same thing from the Iranian side, that we're happy to enter into an agreement, a long-term agreement, that will guarantee that our development of nuclear energy is for peaceful purposes only and does not allow or permit enrichment above, 5%, and that we will be open for inspections. But they're going to insist that Russia will be part of that. Well, so there are some of the details still to be worked out. And so Trump appears willing to accept this as a foundation. But if Trump tells Witkoff, no, you got to go back. They can't have any more. They got to get rid of their missile fleet. They can't have those missiles. And they've got to withdraw all their support for Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis. Then, at that point, the Iranians will tell Trump and company, go screw yourselves. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do it. So that's going to, Trump needs a victory.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if I had to bet more on his narcissistic desire to be the winner, that he'd take this deal, even though it's a deal he rejected 6 years ago.
Yeah. What does Russia get out of all of this? That's what's interesting to me and curious to me, as well as China. Is it just to be a thorn in the U.S. side, a distraction? It has to be more than that. Is it oil?
Well, it's a combination of things. Number one, Russia and Iran have been working now for a few years, and it's accelerated with the extension of Iran into BRICS, mm-hmm. on this what's called the North-South Transport Corridor. So what Russia's looking at is having a combination of rail traffic and some maritime traffic. It goes over the Caspian Sea, so they can load up container ships that can sail from one end of the Caspian Sea to the other, offload, reload those on trains and send them south to the Arabian Sea. And so it's an Iranian port. So this Iranian port is going to really start developing into something significant in the next 10 years, and as well to receive any goods coming out of China and other places. So that north-south corridor through Iran is a strategic location. Plus, Russia wants to make sure that it's not faced with a country that's closely aligned with the United States and hostile to Russia on its southern border. It'd be very vulnerable. We just remind folks that during World War II, when the Lend-Lease was in operation and the United States was helping supply the Soviet Union in its fight against the Nazis, that corridor was used from southern Iran going up through Azerbaijan into Russia. So Russia's looking at this strategically. For China, it's all about access to oil and gas, having reliable access that they don't have to face being, being tariffed or sanctioned. So it's a natural relationship with Iran, and Iran is one of the major oil producers in the world. So here's China in this relationship now with Russia and Iran, It's, building some security for itself from the U.S. pressure.
Yeah, let's talk about China some and work that out for me. They've been in the news a lot because of all the tariffs that are going on. And again, a lot of countries have been in the news a lot because of the tariff situation, but specifically China. What does this mean to China? Are they going to be like a wounded animal, if you would, getting pushed in a corner here? Are they going to be lashing out to the US? They just, correct me if I'm wrong, they just stopped to and exporting all rare earth minerals, really anywhere. From what I understand, not outside of China. So it seems to me tensions are greatly escalating there, even beyond economic tensions.
Yeah, so let me ask you a question.
Please.
Can you name me one product that the U.S. exports to China that China absolutely must have that it can't live without?
US dollars? I know, not really. I can't.
Yeah, that's now let's turn that question around. What products does China export to the United States that we can't live without?
Probably the shirt I'm wearing.
Well, let's start with iPhones, MacBook Pros, computers, some significant technology that comes that's sent to us via China. Let's talk, as you mentioned, the rare earth minerals. Right now, they've suspended those rare earth minerals, but what people need to understand is those minerals are essential to producing batteries for electrical vehicles, for producing weapons, for guidance systems in military aircraft. There's not alternative. We don't have an alternative place to go to, because even if you can get the mineral out of the ground, what China's advantage is, they got the processors. You got the plants that process and produce the finished product. I was told by someone who's an expert in this whole field that if the United States went on a warp speed to produce those plants, it would take us 5 years. Okay. So, and then there are pharmaceuticals, people that are on taking atorvastatin or some insulin that's produced in China. Okay, so you tell me, we're the ones that are going to suffer in the United States. And we are so damn arrogant that we think we can boss those little Chinese people around. No ticky, no laundry, It's just a bunch. We forget the racism that was exhibited towards Chinese workers back in the 1860s, 1870s, who worked on the rail lines, and open discrimination. They haven't forgotten. They remember. On any, we are not anywhere in any category able to compete with them on an industrial basis. We don't have the STEM graduates, the science, technology, engineering, mathematics grads. China surpasses us, on that count. And they've got, they're no longer this impoverished country that they once were. Now, do they have economic problems? No. But they have a political system that if, let's say it goes into recession. Hell, let's say it even goes into a depression. Who are they going to blame? No longer going to blame Xi, because he can say, hey, those Americans, they did this. And that message is resonating right now throughout China. More than 1 billion people get that. This is an attack by the West on us. Now, what happens in the United States if the economy goes bad as a result of this? Who are we going to blame? The Chinese didn't do this. Donald Trump did it. I mean, that's what these guys aren't thinking this through. It's just stupid. Absolutely stupid. Because, I'm told that the real reason behind all of this was to deal with the staggering deficit that is hanging over us. And that, frankly, China could sink us in a minute if they started selling off all the treasuries that they've held. And in fact, they've been selling off treasuries over the last 2 or 3 years. And they've been buying up massive amounts of gold. Because they're looking ahead and recognizing the United States is not a reliable political partner.
Yeah.
We cannot trust the United States. We're going to have to be prepared to go it alone. And what has accelerated this process was the U.S. Effort to, you know, equip Ukraine to attack Russia. Russia preempted that attack in February of 2022. And then the were sanctions imposed by the West on Russia woke the Chinese up and said, okay, we're going with the Russians.
So that leads me to ask is, in your opinion, this was a strategic misstep or blunder?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because it's hard for me to see how we're going to get rare earth minerals right now, because we need them right now. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we need them now. I understand that the DOD had stockpiled a few, but, you know, not in the quantity that's needed, particularly in light of having depleted our, well, let's call it our arsenal supplies of things like HIMARS, ATACMS, M777 artillery shells for the howitzer. Of course, let's see, they no longer are producing the ATACMS. They've got a new replacement, except they haven't really mass produced that yet. It's on the drawing board, okay? Trust us. Same thing with M777, 155 millimeter howitzer. Got rid of that too, because we got a new one coming online that, again, it's not built and ready to be deployed, but by God, it's on paper and we've tested it. HIMARS, I think we're still making those. Patriot missiles, we make 550 a year. And when you consider that you use a Patriot missile, it's fired against an incoming rocket. You fire two at least. So as long as the Chinese only fire 250 missiles at us, we'll be fine. Boy, if they fire 300, we're screwed. You know?
Yeah. So what do you think the next move then specific to China would be, and then also specific to the U.S.? Game this out and play this out for me.
So Trump is, I'll put him in the category of a three-year-old child that's throwing a tantrum and crying and screaming, and the parents just ignore him. And so at some point, I think you may have seen a kid do this. You know, that side look, see if anybody's paying attention. And finally, when they realize, okay, this is not working, you got to change. Trump's going to have to change course, because the Chinese are not going to give one inch on this. They are furious, but they're not letting their emotions take over. We're just like, okay, we understand now what the United States is. We understand that we cannot trust them. So we will find alternatives, which is, again, one of the reasons they've been focused on BRICS, one of the reasons they're focused upon opening markets around the world. The, you know, Trump and his team say, oh, we got the most consumers. You know, think about how sick this is. You know, we've got, we're probably the fifth largest population in the world. You know, I think it's China and India. I think India is number one now. China's number two. I think number three may be Indonesia.
Yeah, maybe Pakistan.
And then, but, you know, we're the top five. But, you know, we're not, you know, we don't have 30% of the world's population. All right. Mm-hmm. And yet we're consuming 32% of everything that China produces. We're just this mass, mass consumers.
Well,
other countries are coming, coming along. I lived in Honduras in 1978, and I was doing community, teaching contour farming in the mountains. And my wife is a nurse. And so initially, when we were there in 78, we lived, we had a kerosene lamp at night. We used an outhouse. I said we had running water. I'd go to the well, pump water, and then put it in buckets and run back to the house. That was running water, okay? We went back and visited 3 years later. Now, all of a sudden, these people who used to go to bed essentially when the sun went down and it got dark, they all of a sudden had electricity in these very remote parts of Honduras. They had televisions. So they were the acquisition, the purchasing, even though before they had lived sort of a simple, these were coffee farmers. That's starting to take place. And I think you're going to see, like in Africa, booting the damn French out of the Sahel, I think you're going to see those countries actually start to blossom economically because they're going to be free of this imperialist model that was imposed upon. So that's where China's going to go. China's got some alternatives. One of their major imports from the United States is soybeans. Oh, I wonder who else grows soybeans. Oh, that'd be Russia. That'd be Brazil. Hey, guess what? Brazil and Russia are part of BRICS. All of the family. So that's what I say. This is, anybody that thinks that Donald Trump is playing 3D chess doesn't know how to play even 1D chess, okay? Donald Trump is basically taking the checkerboard and kicked it over, thinking that the other side is keen to play checkers and will get down on their knees and pick up all the pieces and set the board back up and say, I'm sorry, Mr. Trump, let's be friends. Can't we be friends? The 70s rock song comes to mind. That's not going to happen. China holds more cards than the United States in this, I would insist. And the United States is in a much more vulnerable position. The problem is we think we're richer, tougher, better than we are. It's always good to have I'm not against having a good self-image. But when your concern for yourself turns into psychotic narcissism, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
And I say, I voted for Trump over Kamala Harris. And I was initially early on feeling that maybe Trump learned something from his odyssey in the last 4 years. No, didn't learn much.
Got it. So we'll end on this comment about Russia, Ukraine, just where we're at with that. And what should we expect now? It hasn't been in the news really within the last couple of weeks, but yeah, where are we at with that?
Well, if you want to have some fun, do an AI search, use like Perplexity AI or and ask the question, what towns, villages, and cities has Russia captured and held since January of 2024? You get a long list. If you ask that same question about Ukraine, the key phrase there is captured and held. Zero. Zero. Well, what about Kursk? Yeah, what about Kursk? They sent 30,000 people, 30,000 soldiers into Kursk back in August. They had captured the most villages and hamlets in Kursk by September of 15th. And then the Russians started compress. And the estimated casualties that Ukraine incurred was over 70,000 KIA. And lost the mountains of equipment, tanks, Bradley fighting vehicle. And so right now, the Russians are moving methodically to the west, all along that north-south line of contact. It's about 1,200 miles. It stretches from Sumy in the north all the way down to Odessa. And, you know, to put that into some, you know, if anybody's ever driven from, say, New York City to Miami, Florida, that's the distance we're talking about. Significant difference. Now, that's why he, you say, well, why can't 600,000 troops do more? Well, that's what Russia supposedly has deployed on the front lines. But spread 600,000 people out along a 1,200-mile front, okay? Mm-hmm. You're not able to concentrate massive force. But that's not what they're doing yet. But an offensive is underway by Russia, and it's going to continue to accelerate. Under the right conditions, could very well break the Ukrainian army by June.
Yeah. You know, I was listening to a commentary about this, and I think they kind of nailed it. It's very similar to what you just said. It's like, don't think of Russia as a bear thief, even as a bull constrictor, if you would, or a python.
Yeah.
Really surrounding, squeezing the life out of you with thoughts.
Yeah. It is the latest recruitment figures. So that since the Kursk invasion by the Ukrainians, the number of people in the Russian, the number of men, young men signing up for the army is increased. And it's not been because of signing bonuses. It's increased because the patriotic call, I guess, is what's motivating them. Whereas in Ukraine, they're offering huge financial incentives to get 18 to 24 year olds to sign up, and very, very few are taking advantage of that. And there are already reports coming back from the front of these 18, 19 year old, both one boy, one girl that signed up. They're now both dead. War's getting around.
Yeah. So, Larry, thank you. We'll end on that. Thank you for coming on. If people want to know more about you, get in touch with you, howabouts do they do that?
If they go to sonar21.com, SONAR21.com, find everything you want about me or not, that's the place.
Excellent. I'll put all that in the show notes on the YouTube channel, as well as the Apple and Spotify podcast. Larry, you're one of my go-tos, if not my go-to for geopolitical. I do appreciate whenever I get a chance to talk to you. Thank you so much for your graciousness.
Well, thanks for your kind words. You're flattering old man.
We'll see you next time.